You're listening to the North Carolina Reading Service, broadcasting from Raleigh, North Carolina, serving the blind and print-impaired community since 1983. This is Nancy Jones. For the next hour, I will be reading to you from the July-August 2025 issue of Vanity Fair magazine. This is Vanity Fair, Part A. Here's the continuation of Whatever Means Necessary by Catherine Aben. During Means's tenure there, a spokesperson for Edelman says the company did not represent either the American Beverage Association or Coca-Cola in the U.S. A spokesperson for the American Beverage Association confirms it never employed Edelman. Coca-Cola was unable to respond by deadline. The NAACP did not respond to a request for comment. The American Beverage Association did fund a coalition that opposed soda restrictions during this time frame, but that group did not use Edelman to conduct PR, according to its tax filings, and a former member of Edelman's leadership team who oversaw food and beverage accounts. The scenarios Means paints are highly unrealistic for another reason, says a former Edelman colleague. Had any money exchanged hands, the interactions would have included lawyers at each step and only the highest level folks in the room. The former colleague adds, a transaction like that at Edelman that would involve a junior associate is about as impossible or impractical an assertion that I could think of. When reached for comment for this story, Means initially referred Vanity Fair to a former colleague he described as his lieutenant to refute your bullshit smears. When contacted, the former colleague declined an interview, saying by text, Callie shared the questions you sent over to him, and I did not work closely with him on those projects, so unfortunately can't provide any background. She was tearful about it. After Edelman, Means went on to Harvard Business School, where he met Leslie Voorhees, who already had considerable business experience and had managed a Nike factory in Jakarta, Indonesia. They married in 2016 in Portland, Oregon, and that same year launched a wedding dress startup called Anomaly that gave brides an affordable way to custom design their gowns. The dresses were made in China. Means framed the company as a consequential disruptor of the status quo. Fundamentally, the complete brokenness of the wedding dress industry has been an uncovered topic, he told a Forbes journalist in 2018. And there's going to be a time this year when every reporter in the country is writing about it in anticipation of all these bankruptcies. That never happened, and the couple sold Anomaly to David's Bridal for an undisclosed price in 2022. Their son was born that year, and they named him Rourke after the conformity-busting protagonist of The Fountainhead. The inciting incident of Means's Maha conversion had come a year earlier. In January 2021, Callie and Casey's mother, Gail Brown Means, was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer and died just a few weeks later. She was 71. It was a devastating loss, and it inspired them to take action, as Means told Joe Rogan last year. Casey and I, on her gravesite, literally hugged each other and said we want to write a book to raise awareness about the missed warning signs of poor health that led their mother to be chopped down by cancer. Casey had already embarked on a journey to understand the real reasons why people get sick, their book recounts. Good Energy presents a narrative of Casey Means's own journey from medical establishment wunderkind to prominent critic. In 2018, just months before completing her five-year residency in ear, nose, and throat surgery at Oregon Health and Sciences University, I walked into the chairman's office at OHSU and quit. The book describes her transformation from cog in a profit-driven sick care system with medical training that taught her nothing about the root causes of illness to a physician free to have deep conversations with her patients to help restore and maintain good health. Paul W. Flint, M.D., who was chairman of the Department of Otolaryngology, Head and Neck Surgery at OHSU at the time, tells Vanity Fair that when Means left the program, it was because she found the surgical work too stressful and was not able to continue in the residency even after taking a paid leave. Flint says that Means returned from leave saying, "I still can't do this." She was tearful about it. He adds that the other residents had to cover for her, and we're a small department, and all the calls fall on them. Two former OHSU residents who served alongside Casey tell Vanity Fair that they do not recognize the version of events laid out in the book. In their view, Casey misrepresented her residency training and proclaimed a medical conspiracy against good health that simply didn't exist. They describe her as being anxious and fearful of harming patients. "It feels disingenuous, demonizing your practice. She didn't make it through," one of the former residents says. "By trying to question our entire field and sowing distrust in medicine, it's hard to ignore that she may benefit from that." Another former resident says, "I did not witness a spiritual awakening. It felt more and more like she was preying on the less educated and using the MD she had to tout these pseudoscience things." Casey Means declined to provide an on-the-record response. In a statement issued after her nomination, Stanford Medical School reiterated that she graduated in 2014 and returned in 2022 to lecture on food and health. The school said, "We are proud that Casey Means, MD, has been nominated to serve as the United States Surgeon General." Beware of companies misrepresenting nutrition. In June 2022, Callie Means and Justin Mayers, founder of the Kettle and Fire bone broth brand, launched True Med. The goal was to enable patients to use their health savings accounts to buy wellness products. Typically, HSAs allow patients with high deductible health insurance policies to set aside pre-tax money to help pay for uncovered medical expenses. Using True Med, customers could fill out an online survey, identify their symptoms, and quickly obtain a letter of medical necessity from a doctor or nurse practitioner. The letter, in turn, would allow them to use HSA dollars to address the root cause of chronic diseases, as Means puts it. True Med partners with companies that sell items ranging from supplements and red light therapy to smart mattresses that track sleep and takes a percentage of the sales. One customer seeking to purchase a Peloton bike through the website filled out an online survey and in short order received a letter from a nurse practitioner citing an anxiety diagnosis and recommending that the patient bike, row, tread through class membership for 150 minutes per week. True Med's initial vision was to rebrand partner companies, including the salad chain Sweetgreen and the meal kit company Daily Harvest, as healthcare companies, according to early marketing materials obtained by Vanity Fair. That would enable customers to use their tax-free HSA dollars to purchase food. In December 2023, a Washington Post wellness column explained to readers that they could now use HSA dollars for certain healthy foods and gym memberships, and Means was quoted saying that the company planned to partner with more large food brands soon. 3 months later, however, the IRS issued an alert that warned, "Beware of companies misrepresenting nutrition, wellness, and general health expenses as medical care for HSAs and similar types of accounts." The same day, the Washington Post ran a follow-up noting the IRS's warning and its caveat that medical letters must result from face-to-face interactions with the patient, either in person or through telehealth visits. Getting a medical letter by filling out a questionnaire was not adequate, a potentially crushing blow to TrueMed's business model. On March 6th, the day the Washington Post ran its follow-up, Means had his first sit-down with RFK Jr. as a guest on his podcast. In the episode entitled IRS Pro Pharma Anti-Health, released a week later, Means asserted a conspiracy. Well, just to give some inside baseball, a literal pharmaceutical lobbyist who was upset with what we were doing tipped off the IRS, and the IRS called the Washington Post. The IRS was embracing policies, Means suggested, that were intended to get Americans sick and onto a pharmaceutical treadmill. By contrast, he described his company as disruptive and working against entrenched interest. Sherry Gleed, the dean of NYU's Robert F. Wagner Graduate School of Public Service, is an economist who has studied HSAs. She says the accounts amount to a tax break for the wealthy and are completely useless for someone living paycheck to paycheck. You want medical freedom, she says? Spend your own money. But why should I pay higher taxes because you want a Peloton bike? Full Metal Jacket crazy. On February 13, 2025, RFK Jr. was sworn in as health secretary. Speaking from the Oval Office, the scion of America's most famous Catholic family cast his rise in religious terms. For 20 years, I've gotten up every morning on my knees and prayed that God would put me in a position where I can end the childhood chronic disease epidemic in this country, he said. On August 23rd of last year, God sent me President Trump. 5 days later, he told thousands of Health and Human Services employees that he intended to wage war on the corrosive power of money as it infiltrates and captures institutions like ours. He vowed to remove conflicted members of advisory committees and shutter the revolving door to industry. His own conflicts and those of his closest allies were another story. Incoming cabinet members are supposed to forfeit any financial interest that might compromise their official duties. But Kennedy tried to retain a 10% stake in personal injury litigation targeting Merck over its Gardasil vaccine. Only after a public outcry did he transfer it to his son. As for Means, he posted an advertisement on LinkedIn 2 days after the election for an opening at TrueMed, a chief of staff, to help manage the intersecting worlds of TrueMed and healthcare policy work. Center of Democracy Defenders Fund says Means' post seems to show an intent to develop policies, maybe in advance of entering government, to benefit his company. By March, Means, now a special government employee, assisting the Maha Commission, began flying from state to state and campaigning to ban sugary drinks from nutrition assistance programs. In response, MAGA lawmakers in red states have become unlikely advocates of a healthy food movement. In late March, West Virginia's governor signed a bill removing 7 different food dyes from school lunches. To Vani Hari, the food babe, the GOP's embrace of Maha is a welcome development. It's so good for humanity and so good for the country, says Hari, who was a 2-time Obama delegate, but says the Democrats never took up this issue as effectively, Michelle Obama's organic garden and Let's Move efforts notwithstanding. If the Democrats want to survive, they will have to try and out-Maha the Republicans. Yet others question whether Maha is a movement at all. It's an entity in which the branding has outstripped the content, says Peter Lurie, president and executive director of the Center for Science in the Public Interest. There is a slogan and a certain amount of grift. From the fringes of Maha, Medical freedom hardliners began to take aim at Means, seeing his emphasis on food policy as a misdirection strategy aimed at diluting the attack on vaccines. In blog posts, they combed through his background, questioning his links to supposedly shadowy entities from the Rockefeller family to the Council on Foreign Relations. Mary Tally Bowden, M.D., who was suspended from Houston Methodist Hospital in 2021 for promoting dangerous misinformation, which is not based in science, and has campaigned to get the COVID-19 mRNA vaccines pulled from the shelf, tells Vanity Fair that Means sparked her suspicions when he showed up out of nowhere as a leader of the MAHA movement that shifted the focus from vaccines to food. That was just a red flag for me, she says. Others think Means has been subjected to bad jacketing, a targeted effort to undermine him by spreading doubt about his true believer bona fides. If you're not buying into the full metal jacket crazy, then you're controlled opposition, says a physician and MAHA insider. You're serving some cult master that is not disclosed in some way. Means has done his best to assuage the suspicions, in part by adopting the fire and brimstone language of the MAHA fringe. He recently told a far-right streaming platform that demonic forces are profiting from children being in fear, being addicted, being sick. He's also gone out of his way to directly attack vaccine scientists. On a CNN panel in February, he lit into fellow guest Paul Offit, a pediatrician who holds the Maurice R. Hilleman Chair in Vaccinology at the University of Pennsylvania's Perelman School of Medicine, which is endowed by the pharmaceutical company Merck. Comparing Offit to a NASCAR driver wearing their sponsors, Mean said, "I mean, that is just insane. Merck does not have children's interest at heart." As Offit struggled to explain that the endowed chair came with no quid pro quo and that Merck gives money to the medical school, not to him, Means laughed out loud and spoke over him. The segment rocketed around the internet. "You're attacked in this fire hydrant way," says Offit, reflecting on the exchange, "for the purpose of creating a one-minute clip to show he's taken me on and brought me down." One big GNC store. In January 2024, Means arrived at the Renaissance Esmeralda Resort in Palm Springs, California, for the annual meeting of a philanthropy called Stand Together, founded by the libertarian billionaire Charles Koch. Koch-backed organizations have long sought to dismantle government-subsidized health insurance programs, from the Affordable Care Act and Medicaid to the Veterans Health Administration, and replace them with tax credits to purchase private insurance. Nothing about the exclusive event was posted online, and the organizers held the guest list close. Means was seeking funding to launch a nonprofit whose purpose was to end chronic disease, in part by lobbying the federal government to allow Americans to buy wellness items with HSA dollars, the very purchases offered by his company, TrueMed. Not everyone was happy to see him. One former Stand Together employee who was there viewed an alliance with him as reputationally a third rail, citing Means' lack of medical credentials and the shakiness of his public health claims. Regardless, in June 2024, Stand Together's healthcare director, J.C. Hernandez, became the executive director of End Chronic Disease, Means' nonprofit lobbying group. He has since changed his title to co-founder on his LinkedIn account. According to his page on the social media site, he overlapped at both organizations for 6 months. Previously, Hernandez had worked as a registered lobbyist for another Koch organization, Americans for Prosperity. Neither Hernandez nor Stand Together responded to requests for comment. The press release announcing the launch of End Chronic Disease listed 20 members of its coalition, including Means and his TrueMed partner, Mayors. It made no mention of specific donors, referring only to funding through a bipartisan group of leaders, and its website includes no financial disclosures. The nonprofit's registered address leads to the same office complex in Arlington, Virginia, where Stand Together, Americans for Prosperity, and the Charles Koch Foundation are headquartered. Of the original 20 coalition members, 12 had either invested in or partnered with TrueMed. Today, the coalition has grown to 28, including boldface names in the wellness space, from functional medicine doctor Mark Hyman to Jillian Michaels. Both sell their products on the site, and Hyman was an investor. The End Chronic Disease website, until recently, directed patients to contact their legislators, urging them to support the HOPE, Health Out-of-Pocket Expense Act, which would allow HSA dollars to be used more expansively. In May, House Republicans passed their reconciliation tax bill, which, in addition to preserving tax cuts for the wealthiest Americans and gutting Medicaid, contained a number of provisions that could expand HSA use significantly. Even without that expansion, one report estimates that by the end of 2026, HSA accounts will hold more than $175 billion in assets. Many of the End Chronic Disease Coalition members are selling products that would potentially benefit from such legislation. Infrared saunas and cold plunges, herbal medicines and protein powders, and ketone drinks. Some are available through TrueMed's platform. Speaking with Vanity Fair, Representative Jake Auchincloss says of the MAHA takeover of HHS, their self-designation as oracles of health care gives them license for corruption. They are out there using tax preferential dollars for wealthy people to buy saunas, and they are going to turn our entire health care system into one big GNC store. On May 22nd, Trump and Kennedy sat shoulder to shoulder at the White House to deliver a report from the MAHA Commission, Make Our Children Healthy Again. Over 72 pages, the paper, which Means helped to coordinate, calls out the scourge of ultra-processed foods, antidepressants, toxic pesticides, and the possible role of childhood vaccines in making our children the sickest generation in American history, as Kennedy put it. The MAHA Commission is scheduled to deliver its follow-up strategy paper in mid-August. The press event was in many ways the apotheosis of Means's whirlwind rise, with the two men he'd connected less than a year earlier driving a splashy news cycle. Means was in the audience, sitting dead center, absorbing it all. In little more than a week, it would emerge that the report cited a number of studies that didn't actually exist. A White House press secretary said that formatting issues were to blame. Means took to X to argue that special interests were quibbling with footnotes while the report had fearlessly tackled taboo subjects. Additional reporting and research for this article by Liz Rosenberg. swing big. Can a high-tech makeover turn golf into a fast-paced, arena-filling spectacle? TGL's big-name investor sure hopes so, by Andrew Zaleski, with photographs by Rosemarie Comrell. Opening photo, the main attraction. A 64-foot-wide, 53-foot-tall screen sits center stage. Inside a cavernous arena in Palm Beach Gardens on a chilly for Florida Tuesday night in January, about 1,500 of us pile into our seats. We all know why we're here. Governor Ron DeSantis, flanked by a chiseled-chinned bodyguard, knows. DJ Khaled, with his luxuriantly coiffed beard on full display, knows. Serena Williams, the women's tennis icon and widely regarded goat of the sport, also knows. Alexis Ohanian, her husband, co-founder of Reddit, and this evening's Sonny Crockett cosplayer, thanks to his white sport coat, knows as well. So does showrunner and streaming hitmaker Shonda Rhimes. So does world champion soccer player Alex Morgan. So does every single ticket holder, some of whom spent close to $1,000 just to get through the doors. Celebrities and civilians, all eagerly anticipating the arrival of the man of the evening. First, we see the smoke, a billowing cloud of red that engulfs him from head to toe, a picture we're watching on two large, high-definition monitors at the front of the arena. Then the opening chords of Survivor's Eye of the Tiger kick in as the smoke clears, and we see him in the flesh. It's Tiger Woods, striding down a tunnel and into the arena, sporting a boyish grin and his signature red polo. When Woods spots his teenage son, Charlie, in the stands, he delivers an emphatic high five, punctuated by a full belly laugh, walks onto the field of play, and acknowledges the crowd, pointing both index fingers skyward. A deafening roar floods the air. Colin Morikawa is here, too, and he knows what he's up against. The 28-year-old phenom made his first 22 consecutive cuts on the PGA Tour, second only to Woods' 25-cut record. And he's ready to release the same competitive energy tonight. Morikawa stands to the side as Woods positions himself on a tee box, 35 yards from a holy-shit-sized simulator screen, 64 feet wide and 53 feet high, big enough to stack seven gray whales with room to spare. Mark Morrison's Return of the Mac suddenly blares over the arena's loudspeakers. Then Woods makes contact, sending his golf ball 270 yards down the fairway through a digital landscape as shouts of "in the hole" and "attaboy" ring out from snapback-capped dudes in the crowd. Woods walks off to his right. Morikawa readies his team. The match is on. Welcome to TGL. Golf, one might say, is a sport that has long managed to alienate swaths of society without even trying. It's the quiet activity of country clubs that takes hours to complete. Though the origin of the line is disputed, many writers, the cheeky bunch we are, have described golf as being of such considerable length that it's enough to spoil a good walk. For many, it's maddening to follow, let alone learn. Whiff opportunities abound, the sort of stuff that can turn middle-aged men apoplectic right after unironically uttering the phrase, "There he is." Now a bankable list of top-flight players, television veterans from NBC and E-SPAN, A-list celebrities, including Justin Timberlake, Justin Bieber, Shaquille O'Neal, Stephen Curry, and Jimmy Fallon, and a madcap group of visionaries from the PGA Tour and other sports leagues, are betting hundreds of millions of dollars that golf can be something more. The TGL, which kicked off its inaugural season in January, is unlike anything the game has ever seen. The abbreviation stands for TMRW Golf League, a nod to the founding organization. An effort almost 5 years in the making, TGL is a made-for-TV revision of the sport that plans to become the mecca of sports simulations by turning golf into a freewheeling video game. 40-second shot clocks to keep matches short and fast-paced, and 15-hole courses to keep play to 2 hours. Golfers don't compete individually, but rather on teams. 6 in all, spread across the U.S., and 3-on-3 style contest with a rotating fourth player who sits out. Through the first 9 holes, they play alternating shots, while holes 10 through 15 are played one-on-one, each teammate squaring off on their own for 2 holes apiece. Next photo, Eagle Eye. The game is captured by 73 different cameras, including a Skycam, as well as a robot camera on wheels. You want to take people where they haven't been, says one TGL producer. All 24 players, who in addition to Woods and Morikawa, include the likes of Ricky Fowler and eventual 2025 Masters Tournament champion Rory McIlroy, are top PGA pros. They're mic'd up at every match, much the same way the NFL uses hot mics to catch candid commentary, although it's not optional in TGL. The point is to hear players talking tactics and trash to one another. And every single match airs live on ESPN from the SoFi Center, a nearly 250,000 square foot enclosed arena that cost $50 million, with general admission seating on the ground level and club boxes for VIPs just above. It's dramatic for the game, Woods said from the broadcast booth during the very first televised match, a week before he got his introduction to DGL. Here's something that's going to change the game, how it's perceived, how it's looked at. Picture being courtside at an NBA game, and you have the gist of what a TGL match is like on the ground. At times, you're no farther than 10 feet from some of the best golfers in the world. Cheering is encouraged. Beer and mixed drinks flow freely, and golf balls zip to the sound of Avicii and Kanye West. DJ Irie, the man who formerly spun tracks for the Miami Heat, handles the music. The atmosphere's so different for us. When you get 1,500 eyeballs looking directly at you, things change, says Morikawa, captain of the Los Angeles Golf Club. You got to be there for 2 hours, and you don't want to let the team down. Matches begin on 2 tee boxes, one behind the other, facing the massive screen. Golfers start on the box farther back to drive. Once they're within 70 yards of the pin, they move to the box in front. Courses are immense. How's a 720-yard par 5 sound to you? Over a freaking canyon, by the way. Ball tracing technology projects the flight of each ball based on its spin, angle, speed, angle of attack, and even the number of dimples it contains as it impacts the screen and continues to soar through virtual environments. Play shifts to the back of the arena at around 45 yards away. An overhead spotlight highlights where golfers' balls land. And they finish each hole on a short game complex of more than 22,000 square feet, complete with sand bunkers and a synthetic putting green with 7 pin placements. The green is positioned on a 41-yard-wide rotating turntable and kitted out with nearly 600 underground actuators, morphing the physical terrain golfers navigate based on which of the league's 30 bespoke holes they're playing. Taken together, all of these simulations allow golf to skirt around the sport's typical constraints by blending digital and physical reality. Next photo, it moves. The green is a 41-yard-wide turntable that operates like a rotating stage. Its terrain morphs after every hole, thanks to 600 underground actuators, making each putt different from the last. It's a cool new idea, something that's not been done before, and I think an opportunity that you wouldn't want to miss, says LA Club member Tommy Fleetwood, a Brit with a full beard, a mop of brown hair, and the nickname Fairway Jesus, not only for his looks, but also for his knack for hitting the fairway on a golf course. We could all be part of the growth of something that's unbelievable. Win a hole, win a point. Unless you play the hammer, an orange golf towel teams can chuck onto the field to double a hole's point value. Each team gets 3 per match. The team that doesn't throw the hammer has to accept the challenge or concede the hole. The team with the most points at the end of 15 holes wins. The top 4 teams go to the playoffs in mid-March, mere weeks before the Masters, and the champion pockets $9 million. In 2025, Atlanta Drive GC won the money and the SoFi Cup, beating New York Golf Club in a best-of-3 series. Perhaps the closest analog in the pro game is the Ryder Cup, where 12-man teams from the U.S. and Europe go head-to-head, but TGL's idiosyncrasies surely won't be for everyone. The league's 4th match featured the highly anticipated Tiger versus Rory contest, which ended in a tie and therefore went into overtime, in which Woods' team emerged victorious after winning a closest-to-the-pin chip-off. Michael Wilbon of Pardon the Interruption fame was not impressed, comparing the event to a TV studio. He took it further the following week, just after McIlroy won at Pebble Beach, extolling the physical beauty of the course and the joy one presumably feels as great players step up to tee off at hole 18, staring down the legendary cypress tree on the fairway. "This is why you don't give a damn, or I don't, about golf in a studio," said Wilbon. "This is why I'm not watching TGL." Other criticism has focused on TGL's stylistic elements, specifically when it comes to putting hot mics on traditionally reserved and impassive athletes. An article in the Washington Post that appeared just before the season began quoted golf analyst Jeff Feinberg, who said listening to player commentary mid-match will either be really cool or end up being like a cringe karaoke sort of vibe. Damn kids and their rock music. Still, golf traditionalists need not worry much, it seems. "No one's out here saying this is a replacement for golf," says Ohanian, who, along with Serena Williams and her sister Venus, owns the LA Golf Club. "This is a complement to it, and this is a way to elevate the stars of the sport in a different format. Success for TGL depends on just that, an abridged, wacky, more in your face, and it could be more fun version of golf, resonating with arena goers and viewers at home. Breaking down the barriers, in other words, between spectators and generational golf talent." The league's backers, investors, and players alike talk about demystifying the game by marrying tradition with a digital future. "Do that, and you make golf more accessible to new audiences, as well as longtime followers, who probably want to know what's going on inside the mind of a PGA golfer as they're lining up a shot. All that's left to do now is to get tons of viewers to take TGL seriously." Shrinking the game of golf is something Mike McCarley, founder and CEO of TMRW Sports, began thinking about long before he came up with the concept for TGL. He cut his teeth at NBC Sports, starting in 2000, working on broadcast for Sunday Night Football and the Olympics, and making big sporting events even bigger for a more appealing television presentation. The challenge always was doing the same for obscure sports with rules that large audiences probably don't understand well. That was especially true with the Olympics, when activities like curling come under the spotlight. By the time McCarley had taken over the Golf Channel in 2011, he began wondering if there was a better TV experience for a sport played on yawning courses over several days. Three things happened that brought his vision to life. The first occurred about 10 years ago when McCarley linked up with Ryan Daughters, the CEO of Full Swing, a top designer of golf simulators. McCarley picked the company to set up its simulator inside a studio at the Channel, a place that could be used for instruction. The next happened during the pandemic, when he was able to follow Woods around a largely abandoned golf course, something that had never happened in tournaments unthreatened by the specter of an airborne virus. People usually just staked out one spot on the course and only saw snippets of their favorite golfers. Put the game inside, though, and golfers don't have to walk, which means fans get to see every shot from the tee to the final putt. I always talked about keeping one foot in the tradition of the game and the other foot trying to take the sport into the future, says McCarley. What he required, however, was the screen. And in the middle of 2022, he found his answer. Through Daughters, he met Andrew McCauley, then the chief technology officer of Top Golf. The pair convened in Sweden, incidentally an ideal test facility for indoor golf, because who plays in sub-zero temperatures? There, McCauley set up a large hanging canvas, roughly the size of a movie theater screen, onto which a projector displayed one of Full Swing's simulated courses. Then they started hitting golf balls from 35 yards away. The number was special. As McCauley had learned during his tenure at Top Golf, that's the exact distance necessary to get enough data from a golf ball's flight path to accurately predict where it will land in a virtual environment. It also benefits golfers. They could actually start to see the shape of the ball before it hit the screen, McCarley says. Even before this early proof of concept, McCarley already had buy-in from the sport's biggest ambassadors, Woods, McIlroy, and the PGA Tour itself. He took his first meeting with Woods in January 2021. At the end of 90 minutes, he and Woods were on the same page about leaning into a technology that could grow the game. I think this is going to work, McCauley recalls him saying. He told McCarley he would help develop the league and be one of the players, as long as McCarley threw all his weight behind it. He already had. He quit his job and founded TMRW Sports. Pronounce it tomorrow. TGL is its first project. Woods and McIlroy are co-founders. In late November, I flew to Palm Beach Gardens to get an early look at how a TGL match would play out. SoFi Center was still in the middle of construction, but the playing area with the field, the green, and the screen was set up. Seeing the screen was enough to know why PGA golfers could be convinced to try arena golf. It's 5 stories tall, 24 times bigger than the standard 16x9 version. I watched Fleetwood, McIlroy, and Morikawa launch tee shots at the thing over several days, and each player was more in awe than the last. This is insane, Morikawa tells me. It's what I want my backyard to look like. Driving practice brought into stark focus one of the biggest changes in TGL. No caddies. Players use TV monitors by their benches that run simulator software. It allows them to drag and drop where they'd like to aim their ball. As they get closer to the hole, the course image displayed on the large screen shifts correspondingly. This is where the mics on the players gets interesting. They talk strategy with one another instead of with a caddy. The three-on-three nature of every contest means that each player has to leave a ball where their teammate can get it closer to the green. Players who can't drive the ball the farthest tend to avoid teeing off on holes that are much longer than anything they'd encounter in the real world. When teams finally make it over to the rotating, undulating green, all three players go. Guys who would normally compete against each other on the PGA Tour are suddenly working together to decipher the curves and dips that might befall their ball en route to the cup. The triples format, from what I saw, was really cool because everyone's involved, Morikawa tells me a little over a month later, once the season begins and he has an opportunity to watch the opening match and see theory become practice. As for the screen itself, McCauley says they first tried bullet-resistant Kevlar, but golf balls zooming at close to 200 miles per hour tore right through it. The screen they have instead is multi-layered material. The front layer, which displays the course image, is produced by a company called Dazian out of South Hackensack, New Jersey. It's like what you'd see on a rinky-dink simulator screen in the rec room of a city condo complex, except these unpixelated images are generated by 9 state-of-the-art projectors. The middle layer provides elasticity. Behind both layers is a vinyl backing that almost resembles the sail of an old wooden frigate. This layer not only ensures that golf balls don't leave unsightly dents all over the front screen, it also makes it so that balls drop straight to the ground instead of ricocheting back into a golfer's face. The scale is the thing for me that blows my mind, McIlroy said during a TGL preview show on ABC just after the new year. Every time I step in here, I'm just blown away by the size of the screen. Big, big names on these TGL teams. Fenway Sports Group, which owns the Boston Red Sox, is the primary proprietor of TGL's Boston Common Golf Team, which counts McIlroy as one of its foursome. Meanwhile, Arthur Blank, billionaire co-founder of Home Depot and owner of the Atlanta Falcons, threw his monetary muscle into starting TGL's Atlanta team. Yet the Los Angeles Golf Club won the initial bid to become the league's first franchise, largely because that's the way Alexis Ohanian wanted it. He had something of a leg up. He sat on the board of directors for Woods' nonprofit and fielded the golf legend's call just as TGL was getting off the ground. What would a guy from the world of tech startups and venture capital think of a digital golf league? He said to me, "I want this to exist in the world because I know what it's going to do for the sport," Ohanian recalls. Tiger Woods tells you that, and you're like, let's effing go to war. Ohanian won't share the exact amount he shelled out in the end, but he admits it was somewhere between $25 million and $100 million. Lest one doubt his aptitude or passion, one should know that Ohanian, who grew up in Maryland, spent his childhood as a fan of the Washington You-Know-Whos. "I suffered under the cruel hands of Dan Snyder for decades," he tells me. "And most of my decisions as a team owner, I often think, what would Dan do? And then I do the opposite." His all-black Cybertruck, the third one off the lot, is emblazoned in the rear with the LAGC logo. In a serendipitous turn, the LA squad also became the first team to make the playoffs, in a come-from-behind overtime victory on February 24th. Morikawa sunk the decisive putt to tie the match, executed a rather Woods-like fist pump, and then chucked his golf ball to a fan in the stands. Their outcome in the playoffs, however, was surely less than desirable as they lost their match to finish third in the standings on the year. At 5 in the evening on the second Tuesday of January, I returned to the now-completed SoFi Center for the second contest of the 2025 season. It would be Woods' Jupiter Links Golf Club, with Max Homa and Kevin Kisner in tow, against Morikawa and his boys from LAGC, Justin Rose and Sahith Theegala. Alas, Fairway Jesus was sitting out. When I walked into the arena, its composition reminded me of the Wells Fargo Center, where I go to see the Philadelphia 76ers rip my heart out every year. There's a store for fan gear, concession stands, a clubhouse bar for people with fat wallets, and a seating arrangement in the shape of a horseshoe, one that gives anyone, anywhere, lines of sight to both the simulator screen and the putting green that bookend the playing field. You can see every single shot from every single player, all happening live right in front of you, says McCarley. Maybe one of the coolest features is at the top of the arena. The two tee boxes have three fields of play, with real grass for the fairway and the rough, and a square of the same sand used at Augusta National for long bunker shots. Chew up enough divots and golfers need fresh grass, which is grown just outside the arena. From the ceiling hang two monorail tracks. Before every match, maintenance crews haul in and drop new squares of fairway and rough, especially useful as the inaugural season proceeded. On President's Day, TGL put on a triple header with matches at 1, 4, and 7 p.m. Squares were swapped before each one. Not long after I showed up, the first fans started walking in. Quickly, it transformed into a land of quarter zips and khakis, polo shirts, and white New Balance sneakers. A mix of bros and business class began filing into their seats. I took a breath and swore I smelled the aroma of new money and Olipop prebiotic soda. It occurred to me that the Manning brothers might rejoice in such a paradise, and then I remembered that Eli Manning is a minority owner of the New York Golf Club. President Donald Trump's challenger in the primaries, DeSantis, came in shortly after 6 p.m. to watch warm-ups. He was soon hobnobbing with Woods right on the field. When DJ Khaled walked in, a TGL employee snapped a photo of us as I suppressed a rabid urge to dap him up while smooth-talking another one right in his face. Before Woods took the field of play for the opening tee, I got a look inside the production truck where Jeff Newbarth, formerly of ESPN, Turner Sports, and Callaway Sports, takes command not only of what people in the arena see on the high-def monitors, but also of all the action that viewers see back home. There are 73 different cameras at his disposal, a Skycam like you'd see at an NFL game, multiple cameras embedded on the field itself, a robot cam on wheels, and even a camera that sits directly at the top of the simulator screen. By the President's Day triple header, there were rotating cameras inside the flagsticks on the screen. You want to take people where they haven't been, he says. I realized, though, that being at the match itself meant I would miss the dialogue between players, as their live mic conversations are not streamed over loudspeakers during the match. Sure, it's a thrill seeing some of golf's best players live in front of you, but I wouldn't hear what they were saying to one another. This article will be continued in the next installment. This program is intended for a blind and print-impaired audience. I'm Nancy Jones, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service and broadcasting from its studios in Raleigh, North Carolina. Vanity Fair Part A airs via special subchannel receiver on Saturday and Sunday nights at 11 o'clock Eastern Daylight Saving Time, streaming via the World Wide Web at those times. Vanity Fair Part B airs via special subchannel receiver on Monday and Tuesday nights at 11 o'clock Eastern Daylight Saving Time, streaming via the World Wide Web at those times. Both parts A and B are available as a podcast at our website, www.ncreadingservice.org. Opening and closing music by Calexico. Interval selection by Mark Hoffman.